Hey, I'm Michael Whistler, and I sincerely believe that science fiction can help us build a better world. And it's Christmas time, and I thought, why not talk about economic dystopia? This is Exploring Tomorrow. So today I want to talk about a dystopian cyber thriller, as it's been called, Rob Hart's The Warehouse. It definitely fits into the umbrella of speculative fiction. It might not be science fiction quite in the same vein that I have been discussing a lot on this podcast, but it is definitely a near future look in speculation at where we're going. And there are elements of advanced technology and the shifting of society that are all important themes within the realm of science fiction that make this fit, I think, within the realm of the type of fiction that I really enjoy and that I think is really important for us to be thinking about and contemplating where we are as a society and where we're headed. Basically, the premise of near future dystopian novel here is one of economic dystopia. It's basically, there's this company called the Cloud. Cloud is just this massive, massive corporation that has sites all over the world. And given sort of how society has developed and how much corporations have been allowed to influence politics and kind of get their way, this particular company grows to become the most wealthy in the world and becomes really the biggest employer in the world and puts out a lot of other businesses, basically. You know, most of your, pretty much anything mom and pop, and even medium-sized businesses go out of business in this world. And what you're left with is Cloud or other sort of massive organizations, which we don't get to hear much of. I mean, it's basically Cloud has this monopoly on all things. What they do is, well, this is, you know, this is where it starts getting really creepy because it's going to sound familiar. What they do is they have huge warehouses with lots of products, and you can just order the stuff you need online. And these drones fly out and drop it off at your house. This is the science fiction-y part that's not that far off from science fiction. Amazon's been working on this whole drone delivering packages thing for a while. It's not widespread and prevalent yet, but we're headed there. Yeah, we're definitely headed there. Society has kind of devolved into this place where it's not really safe to be going out into the world and doing your shopping in person. Ooh, sound familiar in 2020? I mean, this book, you know, came out 2019. And boy, you know, it's not a pandemic that's going on in Hart's novel. But, you know, whew, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. And so here we are, incredibly relatable. It's much, much safer and easier for me to shop on Amazon and other such sites and get that stuff delivered to me than to go out in person, right? I mean, we still can. If you're being smart, you can go out in person and, you know, wear a mask, please. Even as we get the vaccine, please be smart. Don't spread this thing any further. And let's be safe and get past this. That's an aside. But it's incredibly relevant. And why I wanted to kind of revisit it here around Christmas time of 2020 and to contemplate this whole idea of shopping online. And because, you know, that's all how I did all my Christmas shopping this year for sure. And to be perfectly honest, being the lazy bomb that I am, I have done all my Christmas shopping in years past. So pretty relevant, but incredibly relevant and even more relevant this year, just given that reality that the novel is playing with, this world of social unrest of the haves and the have-nots. And because of that, society isn't really quite a safe and welcoming place. You know, you kind of hunker down in your home if you are a person of means, and you probably work for either Cloud or one of these other big organizations in some upper echelon type job, and you have plenty of money, or you're kind of on your own you really face either two options: go work for Cloud or be destitute. As we sort of get into later in the novel, you start to learn that there's a reason for social unrest, and there are those who refuse to be part of this system. There's also a lot of propagation of fear, right? One of the things I think that there makes this a fair comparison, you know, how the book cover itself, or the book description itself, even describes itself as sort of Big Brother meets Big Business. I think it's a fair comparison to 1984, because there is this use of fear as a controlling mechanism. Fahrenheit 451, there's a use of fear, right, to control people and control people's behavior. And in this instance, fear of, you know, going out and finding other means to make a living or to get the food you need, the products you need, that drives people to make the choice to, well, I'm going to stick with Cloud. Don't rock the boat. I'm just going to hop on the website and I'm going to put my order in and the drones are going to drop it off, and don't give it much thought. Well, what's really cool about the novel is we get this blending of interesting perspectives. There's three key characters that the novel follows. One is Paxton. He's a guy who actually is an inventor, creating products and trying to run his own business. Of course, Cloud ran him out of business. He was trying to, you know, do what many people do today, and trying to sell things through online retailers. And of course, the biggest online retailer in his world was Cloud. And so he's, you know, trying to provide his products and all that. Of course, Cloud kept muscling him down to try to sell lower price, you know, get that price point down. Ultimately collapsed his business, basically yoinked his IP and started making the product themselves. As we read the novel, we start learning that that really is the modus operandi of Cloud, right? They work on basically driving people out of business and getting them to a point where they can just like buy their IP real cheap. And then they get to maximize the profit from it at a price point that they like, that their customers like, and they have no competition. So no big deal. No reason to worry about being disrupted when they can be the disruptor all along. So we meet Paxton as he is basically at his wit's end and doing the thing that he really vowed never to do, which is to go work for Cloud. We also meet Vinia, who's a very fascinating character, who is coming in to apply for a job at Cloud as well. And these two cross paths. Vinia, we quickly figure out, is actually there on her own sort of mission of corporate espionage to work and live inside one of the cloud facilities and gather vital information that may be of use to someone who wants to do something to the cloud, or at least shine a light or blow a whistle on what the cloud is really like. And this is just kind of how she's been making her living in this very segmented world of the haves and have-nots, right? So she, you know, a bit of a arguably morally ambiguous character, but also, I think, quite interesting precisely because of that. And, you know, you can, at least I can really relate to her challenges and her worldview and the reasoning why she chooses to go into this world and to be a spy, to be a double agent, as it were. Well, and this is, you know, as I've already hinted at, the cloud facilities, the way they work, they're actually miniature cities. They're really, well, they feel like malls. And you live and you work in these places. And so there's all a myriad of jobs just to like make the place function. Paxton ends up being basically a security guard, the cloud police, more or less. Meanwhile, Vinia, she works in the warehouse. And this is where it really gets like so creepy and like, but plausible. And then there's like, you know, hearts playing with current technology and like just tweaking it a little to push it into our near future. So Vinia has to wear one of these like smartwatches, you know, think Apple Watch kind of type device. And it's able to vibrate in such a way as to indicate to her, walk forward, walk left, walk right, go back. You're at the right spot. And so she gets all her messages here on her smartwatch. It vibrates to tell her where to go. And it gives her the shelf number and item number right on her smartphone. And she's basically a mindless robot running around a warehouse for like 12 hours a day with a few breaks here and there. And just fetching items and putting them on a conveyor belt. This is stuff that people are ordering online, and so gotta get this item. And she has to, you know, the smartwatch keeps track of how fast she's doing it, and she has to stay like on target, stay in the green. And if you drop down too much, if your numbers aren't good, you get pinged, you basically get demerits. It's really just, it becomes bad news. And so again, fear of being fired ultimately and being thrown back out into a world in which, well, let's face it, if in this world, if you're working at a warehouse for cloud, you really have very few other options. I mean, you really have no other option. So you don't want to get fired. So people get desperate. And people do stupid things, and then they get hurt. And then, of course, living in a world where healthcare is not exactly top priority for the have-nots, you know, a lot of people end up suffering pretty badly. Basically, an internal society is formed at Cloud, and all kinds of things that you expect from a miniaturization of American society continue to happen. So there's racism. There's just, you know, people with authority abuse their authority. They abuse the people under them with impunity. You know, there's really no accountability. And so it's really, it's very disturbing in that capacity. it's also incredibly plausible. You know, it's certainly quite a crazy thing, a big undertaking to think of these miniature cities that are basically encapsulated in this mall-like environment, and they have their own apartments and apartments. I mean, dorms. They're basically like glorified dorms. And they just live and eat and work all in these places. It's pretty fascinating, but pretty creepy too. And I think Hart does a great job of presenting the details and the nuance and the dangers, but also the reasoning why people feel compelled to go into this, and why many people just go, this is my lot in life. And so I'm going to, you know, there's some benefits to be working at Cloud. You have a place to live and you have food, and actually they apparently have great burgers at the Cloud Burger or whatever it's called. More on that if you read the book. It's really, you know, Hart does a good job of sort of like using food as this thing to really sort of get to you get to know the characters and you kind of get to know the world and what the world values and what that society values through the food. That is kind of cool. and one of the big things you talk about is the Cloud Burger. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it, except not really. Read the book. I'm not going to give too much away. It's a really crazy thing that Hart's built, but it's not so crazy. It's actually disturbingly plausible when we think about how close we are to potentially creating that kind of world already. The third character that we get to dive into in this novel is Gibson, the guy who created Cloud. And he's, you know, like, what's fascinating is he's a charming character. So you get the story from these three distinct points of view, which is kind of cool. And Gibson is charming. And he's got that sort of all-American entrepreneurial, I made this thing myself, and isn't it great kind of personality, right? He is not well. He is towards the end of his life. And as a result, he's kind of going through and just reminiscing, blogging about his life, his accomplishments, his thoughts on all those things, and making plans for who will succeed him in being in charge of Cloud. And he's doing a tour of all these different facilities. And so it's interesting because you get to hear kind of his musings and all that kind of stuff. And while he's charming, he is by far, I think, the most disturbing part of the whole novel. Because I think Hart does a good job of imbuing Gibson with this, you know, charming sort of voice, and with this level of logic that I hear regularly used within our world of like, well, I'm creating these jobs and, you know, I'm giving people opportunity and I'm just doing what the market dictates and what the market demands. I'm just providing supply and demand, and, you know, and he, in his mind, basically stressing workers out and overworking them. And in his mind, that's just pushing people to perform their very best, you know. It's a real, like, fundamental breakdown of, I think, of understanding what high expectations are versus pushing people to the brink. And Gibson doesn't seem to have any any ability to see that. And I think in a lot of ways, Gibson is a narcissist. Gibson is willfully blind to the world that he's created. He sees what he wants to see, and he sees this wonderful thing that you know, this empire that he can sit at the top of, but he, I don't think, is really wants to even acknowledge what is happening within his own facility. So there's all kinds of lip service paid to check all the right boxes about, you know, being socially progressive and combating racism and providing equal opportunity for all people and all that kind of stuff. But inside the walls of any cloud facility, the exact opposite is true. And that's what we see play out in the novel. Now, the reason I wanted to sort of discuss this, especially in this 2020, we're doing all my ordering online, and I was reminded of The Warehouse. And first of all, it's a dark but enjoyable novel. It definitely fits into the sort of pessimistic near future cautionary tale type speculative fiction or science fiction. And I definitely qualify it as science fiction. It's, you know, its use of slightly more advanced technology than what we have now certainly qualifies it as science fiction for the time being. You know, ask me again in a decade or two if it's still science fiction. Sadly, by that point, it might well be science fact, and we might be dealing with these types of facilities. Now, it's easy to make comparisons in the novel and be like, oh, you know, it's Amazon. and to be fair, Amazon is something that we need to be consciously cautious and trepidatious about, because, you know, as a filmmaker, for years, I basically had to struggle with Amazon, because Amazon bought out the film festival submission platform called Without a Box. And quite frankly, made it shit. Like, just let it be a piece of crap for a long time. And that was, you know, this is where you know, The Warehouse hits close to home for me, because here was basically Amazon operating very much like cloud and buying out something and then just being like, well, we buy out the competition. We want to own sort of these platforms and we'll just take care of it. And so they did that. Because Amazon owns Internet Movie Database and they bought Without a Box. So they kind of like got this little niche of the market around professional film industry connectedness. And then for a while, other people were trying to make other platforms for film festival submission, and Amazon would just buy them out and kill them, so that you had really only the choice of Without a Box. And so for a long time, the film festival submission process didn't get better, you know, and there was no real avenue, no competition. In fact, a lot of film festivals didn't like it because they had to pay exorbitant amounts of money to be listed on Without a Box. And it just created all kinds of problems. Finally, you know, someone came along that disrupted all of that. Thank you, Film Freeway. And now the world has kind of opened up and there's actually more options. And that has forced Without a Box to actually improve and innovate and become a far more relevant and user-friendly and just less of a shitty platform, to be honest. And so there's a lot of really good articles. If you're kind of a film nerd and you're interested in especially independent film, all that, you can look up that kind of stuff. But that's where it hit home for me, like experiencing that and having to deal with that and having those years where it was, you know, you want to submit the festivals, you submit without a box or you don't, quite frankly. And having run a film festival, I can certainly relate to the struggles and the frustration that festival organizers were feeling around. We either, you know, pay exorbitant amounts of money to be on Without a Box, or we have to go do our own thing and then struggle through that whole process of having to figure it all out. There was no in between. So I relate kind of firsthand in that capacity to the world that Hart's discussing in The Warehouse, where Cloud is just kind of swooping in and sort of mucking up the waters. And, you know, there's so many of these logical, quote unquote, logical arguments towards, oh, but that's just the free market doing its thing. Except that this market doesn't seem to be very free, and it's very clear in how, I would say, both the real world and in Hart's world, how corporate interests have influenced politics to be able to continue to be, to have the higher ground, to be in a position of advantage. When you're not on equal footing, there's certainly some questions about, can the free market really be free and working that way? One of the other really fascinating things about the way that Hart sets up this world is the whole notion of these cities that really are prisons. I mean, you know, you kind of eliminate the need for a lot of the normal social systems in place when you can rope everybody into that would be the quote unquote troublemakers, which really are the people who have less means and are struggling. And you shove them into this weird mall-like environment that's actually a prison that they can't actually just leave from. You know, it's getting to get outside of a Cloud facility is really only happens through very special allowance and carefully orchestrated circumstances. So realistically, especially given that, what other option do most of these people living and working at a Cloud facility have? These places essentially become prisons. You know, another way that it's also relevant to me is that, as being an author, I started self-publishing, and now I'm, you know, publishing with Dokes and News Media, who's, you know, a boutique publishing house. And so there's a lot of crossover there in terms of sort of feeling like an indie author and promoting and having an understanding of how the independent and self-publishing world is working these days. Amazon certainly continues to have a lot of sway and control on how all of that works. And it means that, you know, that I do often, when buying books, get purposeful about checking out, is it available elsewhere? Can I buy it elsewhere? Not because I'm anti-Amazon. And when something's available on Amazon, or it's most convenient or best price on Amazon, I'm like, I'm a consumer. I have limited resources. Of course, yeah, sure, buy it from Amazon. But I often look at other places, especially for books, mostly just because I'm like, well, Amazon's getting enough of my money as is, you know, Prime subscriber and whatnot. So I can check out some of these things somewhere else and make sure there's still a healthy level of competition in existence. Because I am afraid of exactly the types of scenarios that we see play out in The Warehouse, what happens when we don't have an ecosystem, an economic ecosystem that actually fosters innovation and healthy disruption and competition, so that there isn't just one massive conglomerate that's sort of running our world. Because of the world that we're living in and where we're headed in so many ways, I feel like Hart's novel is really relevant and one that we continue to need to think through the practical applications and the practical impact of how we can shape the world we want to have through the choices we're making. And so I think of it a lot as from the view of a consumer. I get to vote with my dollars, and where I buy things has an impact on that. So that's why I try to look for a variety of retailers. Now, I get it. There is an argument to be made for both the convenience and the sustainability of being able to order, say, everything. I need to order, say, 5 items or whatever, and they can all come from Amazon, and all of them could be sourced in the same warehouse, put in one box, and shipped to my house. That is definitely a better, arguably a better, more sustainable, healthier option for the environment than to end up buying them from 5 different places, and they end up in different boxes, and you got a bunch of trucks, delivery trucks arriving at my house to drop this all off. So there is definitely an argument to be made from that perspective, and I get it. Where this is complicated is that there's also arguably more jobs being created by me ordering those 5 different items from 5 different places and 5 different delivery personnel in 5 different trucks have to drop this off. Obviously, there's an environmental impact to all of that packaging and all those delivery trucks and all of that. And obviously, there's an economic impact in terms of being able to support more jobs. And this is where all of these types of discussions get really nuanced and complex. And I cannot claim to be an economist or an environmental scientist with an expertise in carbon footprint and all those kinds of things. But as a consumer, I still want to be aware and thoughtful and purposeful in how I'm shopping. So do I shop through Amazon? Did I shop through Amazon for Christmas this year? Absolutely. Yes, there are just ways in which it's convenient and it makes the most sense and has really the best availability out there in those terms. But do I exclusively shop through Amazon? No. And I purposefully try to look for opportunities to step outside of the Amazon bubble, as it were. But I think where it's really, where we need to step back to and take to Hart's, no pun intended, message and viewpoint here in the warehouse is not just to make that easy comparison of, oh, the warehouse, it's about Amazon. Because I think Hart goes to great lengths to paint a picture that is bigger than just Amazon. And Amazon has its pluses and its minuses. But there are other, we are creating other big, powerful corporations in telecommunication and technology. And, you know, as an Apple user, I have all these Apple devices, and they have so much data on me that obviously there's something to be said and questioned. And there's maybe some healthy skepticism to be held about whether these are always a good thing and whether I'm opening myself up to some problematic realities in terms of how much I surround myself with the specific ecosystem of one company. There's a lot of convenience to it, but there's also some real potential costs to buying in to sort of that corporate cult mentality, which we see play out in the warehouse. And, you know, there's some similarity, some crossover to maybe a novel and the movie, The Circle, which deals more with sort of a Apple Google type massive conglomerate. But I think there's some shared themes there about what are we becoming, where are we headed, and what kind of choices are we making as individuals? Because as an individual consumer, I get it. It's so easy to think of my own choices as so low impact. I'm just one person. And so it's easy to think, well, what impact can I have on the world that we're in and on these massive conglomerates? Well, I think one thing that continues to be encouraging to me is that there is still a real spirit of innovation in our world, and why I remain hopeful that stories like The Warehouse, or The Circle for that matter, are cautionary tales that are worth us keeping in mind and taking to heart, sorry again, the pun, and internalizing that message, and so that we make choices intelligently as consumers around where we source our stuff, where is it coming from, do we have an understanding of the impact we're having. And it can be really daunting, and I get it. And that's why I like resources like Better World Shopper. And you start to get at least a basic understanding of, are these retailers or are these manufacturers engaged in practices that are good for the earth? Are they treating their people well? What kind of score do they get? So that's a resource I've been using for several years to try to take a look at what my purchasing choices, what impact those choices have on the world. So that's just one way we can make choices a little more intelligently and utilize and leverage this age we live in of information technology and of amazing connectedness to demand more transparency and to demand more variety in the channels through which we gain our entertainment, our information, our news, and our products, are the things we need to live, you know, food and shelter and all those things, but also the things we like to have to live well. That's at least this nerdy sci-fi goofball's take on it. I do encourage you, you know, I have no affiliation with Better World Shopper, but check them out. They have some really cool resources available to help people think about purchasing choices they make. And look, none of us is going to be able to like be perfect at this. And this is something that I've often talked with friends about as if we've delved into these things like fair trade and the reality of slavery, which is it's more prevalent in our world today than it's ever been. More people are enslaved today than ever before. And it's just appalling. And so much of it is driven by market economics and the demand for incredibly like dirt cheap products. And so it can be so daunting to think about how can I have an impact on that. And I think the first thing is to embrace and understand that none of us is going to nail it, and none of us is going to be perfect at this. And we can only do the best we can with the knowledge we have available. And so places like Better World Chopper are making that more knowledge available. And we're starting to see also that just through internet research and social media, I think these are some of the positive things that are happening, where people are gaining more awareness, and we see more and more of these smaller, innovative, disruptive companies popping up and saying, hey, we're going to do business differently. We are going to make sure that in our supply chain, there is no, you know, that we're not abusing anyone, that no one's enslaved. Not only that, but they're getting paid a fair wage, that we're sourcing things sustainably, or at least making efforts to become more sustainable. And it's having an impact in our world. This sort of awareness is having an impact in our world. When we have, you know, massive organizations like Hershey, you know, recognizing that where their cocoa for their chocolate is sourced is not coming from sustainable resources, and often involves slavery, and making clear objectives around moving to moving away from that supply chain and moving to cocoa that is sourced sustainably and fairly, and setting clear goals and making that public and known around that, so they can be held accountable to it. That says something, you know, that means that there's reason for hope, is what that means to me. And that we can have an impact with how we're choosing to purchase and where we're choosing to purchase things. And that's why I have hope that things, you know, novels like The Warehouse remain cautionary tales, relevant cautionary tales, but they remain in the realm of fiction. That's my sincere hope. I certainly don't want to see that kind of world come into play. That being said, I think if you read the novel, and I highly encourage you do, you'll find that I think it was the reviewer on NPR's website that pointed out that there's really a fine line that The Warehouse walks, in which it's, you know, depending on how you want to interpret it, or even just how far you want to dig in to the current realities we already live in that inspired the book, you can say it's a near future cautionary tale, or we could just call it really sharp satire. And I think the reviewer has a point about that satire aspect of, you know, this not being too far off from our reality. But where I think things are a little different from the world that Hart has created is that things aren't quite as dire, and we still have more power and more choice as consumers. And my hope is that more of us will continue to exercise that power. And you know, this is something that gives me great hope. A lot of people like to you know, sort of shit on the new generation, whatever they're called, the Gen Zers or something. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, these Gen Zers and stuff. But truth be told, I see a lot of reason for hope, because I see this younger generation being very tuned in to what's happening in the world. What impact are my choices having? And can I do something, even something small, to meaningfully contribute to a better world? That's pretty awesome. That's pretty hopeful. And if we can combine the type of that type of thinking and that type of desire to build a better world with the types of questions being asked, and not just in the warehouse, but in so much of science fiction. I think we have a real possibility here of making strides towards a more equitable, more sustainable, and more peaceful world. That's my hope, at least. And that, maybe that's just me having wishful thinking around Christmas time, peace on earth, you know, that kind of stuff. Or maybe I'm just a bit of an idealist. At the same time, I think the choices before us are either we aim high and shoot for a brighter future, or we descend into despair. And certainly after the past 4 years of self-serving and just utterly maniacal and truly insane cult politics, I'm ready for something fresh. I'm ready for something different. I make no secret about my disdain for the political atmosphere and the leadership, or real lack of, that we've had for the past 4 years. And I hope that we think about what kind of world we want to build and how we can rise up out of this moment and learn the lessons from this moment, utilize this real life cautionary tale to build a better future. And I hope that the next generation is doing that too. And part of that is the type of books and movies and fiction that we engage with as well. So that's why I was drawn to checking out The Warehouse, and that's why I was drawn to like coming back and revisiting it and talking about it here at the end of 2020, this year that has been so trying in so many capacities and, you know, so relevant to the book, or the book so relevant to this year, precisely because of just being sheltered in place and doing all my, so much of my ordering online and getting stuff just delivered to me. You know, it's a crazy time to be alive. All these things converging on top of each other, this political reality, this economic corporate reality that we're in. And I think it's important that we're engaging thoughtfully with our world, and that we're engaging intelligently and purposefully with the fiction that helps us think about what tomorrow could be like. I hope that you do check out The Warehouse. There's so much more to the plot and the characters than I have sort of unpacked in this episode, because I want to just explore some of the themes and ideas. And I want you to be able to enjoy, you know, the actual twists and turns of the plot, which are really cool and very worthwhile. And the characters struggle through some very real tough choices around how do you tackle this system? How do you take it down? Or do you take it down? Do you even have the power? Can it be taken down? You know, or has it gone too far? These are all like sort of questions that get wrestled with in the book. So if you are interested in checking out the book, I definitely recommend doing that. It's definitely a dark, twisted thriller that I found quite enjoyable. There are some trigger warnings worth sort of noting in terms of abuse, harassment, sexual harassment in particular, and things like that, that the book deals with. And you know, to be fair, I think it deals with it deftly and with nuance, not glorifying it, but also acknowledging that, You know, and this is the kind of horrible shit that we would allow to happen if we create these sort of cloud cities and then just let them kind of just be whatever and sort of allow the worst of humanity to sort of surface and have power rather than the best of humanity. So that just a bit of a trigger warning around that. At the same time, I think that the book explores those things authentically and with purpose. It is not glorified or sort of brushed aside or dismissed in some kind of offhand way. It's there for a reason, as is much of the exploration of the book, really. And it's very, Hart does a good job of really purposefully building this world, building these characters, and giving them very relatable, real motivations and thought patterns and worldviews. You know, so that I can get how Gibson ends up thinking the way he does. But even though I completely ultimately disagree with it, disagree with his view of the world and his own accomplishments, I get it. Like, Hart does a good job of creating a three-dimensional character, even in that sort of villain, as it were. Anyway, if you feel like checking out, please do. Pretty fun, fascinating book. And as always, I highly appreciate it if you want to check out some of my books as well. They're all available on my website, michaelwhistler.com. And of course, they're for sale on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and really every major bookseller out there. So if you do want to support this particular crazy, thoughtful, goofy, mildly unhinged indie author, doing appreciate that very much. And as always, thank you so much for watching. Have you read The Warehouse? And what were your thoughts? What did you most connect with? What frightened you the most? And did it change how you shop? or is it like, it's fiction, whatever? I'd love to hear from you. Please comment. Let me know what you thought of this episode. And let me know what you think I ought to be exploring next. The year is winding down, and I am looking already to plan and develop lots of cool episodes for the coming year. I'm looking to bring on some cool guests in the new year and have some pretty fascinating discussions. So please comment. Let me know what you are interested in discussing, what kind of science fiction you most connect with, and let me know what you want to explore in the coming year. Again, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have wonderful holidays. And continue to explore awesome science fiction, ask big questions, and be kind to each other out there. We're getting through this. All right, we'll talk to you soon.